originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you tonight from our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to thank everyone for listening on Sirius 219, XM 206, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. They support some 60 riders who are permanently disabled. Folks, if you are able to help, please visit the website at www.pdjf.org. Our guest this evening just won his 3,000th career victory, becoming only the 174th jockey to do so. He's won more than 100 stakes races most recently. He took the Martha Washington Stakes at Oaklawn with Channel's Legacy, earning 10 points to the Kentucky Oaks for that filly. And I cannot wait to hear his story. I'm very happy to introduce to you all jockey Alex Berzer. Alex, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So glad to have you here on the show tonight, Alex. I know you're a busy man, and you have to be busy celebrating, I'm sure, and I would hope so, after just recently hitting that big milestone at Oaklawn with your 3,000th victory. How does that feel, Alex?
Well, it was good. It was very good. My family got to be there for it. It made it all that much better.
Well, that's awesome that they were able to be there and to watch that and experience that with you. And looking back, Alex, did you ever realize that you would be in this spot when you first started riding?
No. You know, when you're young and first starting off, you just want to ride. That's all you care about, riding. You just want to ride a few horses and, you know, have some fun doing it.
I get it. I rode myself, Alex. That's all you're thinking about. You're not thinking about years down the road or hitting such milestones like this. And you have to be, you should be proud of yourself. All the hard work that goes into this industry and becoming a jockey and to be successful as a rider. And not only that, but you did it the hard way. You rode at the smaller racetracks and, you know, just putting in your time, getting up early, working horses every morning, and that's a hard way to do it, Alex, really. I mean, you've ridden at so many different racetracks. You've been all over the country.
Yeah, we started, well, I always say we, because it's always my family, you know, comes first, but yeah, I started out at Buell Park, rode my first race for my dad, 25 years ago tomorrow.
Wow.
So I'm one day from being 25 years. So yeah, it's been a long ride.
That's incredible. That almost 25 years to the day you won your 3,000th race. That is an awesome story, Alex. And Beulah Park. I know Beulah Park. And you mentioned your father, and you were kind of born in the industry, I suppose, because your dad, He was very much involved in the industry.
Yeah, Dad trained for a while. He rode for a little while and quit riding. Said the thoroughbred industry was no place for a family. And then got back into it a few years later, and You know, that's when I started riding. I can remember as a kid looking at his win pictures, just thinking, man, this is what I want to do. There's no other way. Nothing else I would rather do than ride racehorses.
Wow. So, how old were you then, Alex, when you first decided that?
Elementary school, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old, you know, and it just progressed from there. We left Balmoral one year in the winter. It was one of the last years. I don't think it was the last year they rode, but it was ran, but it was close to it. Turned everything out for a little while, and then when we got back, went to get everything back up, Dad had half a dozen horses at the time, and when he went to get them back up, I went to gallop, and then that was the first year I really started galloping on a regular basis. I'd get done from school, and Dad would come and get me, and we'd go out to the farm where we had them, and I'd gallop them in the barn. They had a big indoor barn, and I'd gallop them, and that's how we got them fit that year. And then once I got out of school, then I was old enough that year to get my exercise license and just went to galloping full time.
Wow. So how old were you when you were getting off of school and going to the farm and galloping horses there? How old were you then?
Junior high.
Okay.
Ninth grade, something like that.
Still pretty young. Pretty young, Alex.
Yeah.
And that makes for a busy day, too, to go to school. Wake up early, go to school, do all your homework and stuff, and then you go to the farm, and you have to get on all these horses. I mean, you mentioned he had quite a few, so that made for a very busy day for a young man.
Well, sure, but, you know, when you're young and you don't like that, you don't even think of it, you know. You just, like I said, when you're young, you just want to ride, you know, and that's just what we did. You know, that's how we did things. I don't know. I don't think nothing of it now. I mean, that's just what we did.
Did you love it from the very beginning?
From the very beginning. I always liked getting on horses, and even now, I enjoy going in the morning and getting on horses. Matter of fact, anymore, I get stiff if I don't get on horses. Getting a little age on me. You know, I ain't as young as I used to be. My back gets stiff. So the more horses I get on in the morning, the better my back gets to feeling.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a rider's life is not an easy one, and injuries are inevitable. So I get it.
It's how many and how severe.
Exactly. How old are you now, Alex?
43.
Ah, you're still young. You're still young.
Oh, got a lot of years left.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. So let's go back to the beginning. I'm just fascinated by how you got started in all this. And your dad rode races for a while. Do you remember going to the racetrack with him and watching him ride?
Well, he had actually quit riding by the time I was really old enough. Like I said, he rode, and then right before I was born is when he quit.
Okay.
So, you know, and like I said, he decided it was really not necessarily any life for a family. Mm-hmm. And he was away from it for about 10 years. And then once he got back into it, I was involved from day one. It was all I wanted to do. I'd rather be at the racetrack than be at school. But they pounded and pounded. They always told me, you know, I couldn't ride until I got my high school diploma. I couldn't ride until I got my high school. You know, high school was first. High school was first. Education.
Yeah. Yeah, they were both of your parents, they were both strict on that.
Oh, very, very much so. So, once I graduated from high school, and I graduated, you know, just all the traveling we did. We bounced from track to track, and I guess I had a wide variety of education. You know, we went to schools all over the U.S. And then once I did graduate, I think I galloped for about a year after that and then started riding in 92.
Was that hard for you, Alex, as a kid to bounce around so much from schools to schools? Or was it maybe, do you look at it like it helped develop you for your riding career whenever, you know, being a gypsy is inevitable, and so that's just part of it that goes with the industry. Do you look at it and think that it was just tough, or it just prepared you?
No, I think it was just, like you said, just the opposite. It just prepared me. I never had any problem with school, never had no problem with making friends, and always I just thrived on it. I thrived on going to the next place and seeing the next bunch of people. And to this day, I'm still the same way. I love shipping time. Some people just cringe. I just love shipping time. I love getting to the next place and seeing all the new people and getting to the new track. And my younger brother was just the opposite. He had a tough time with it. He had a tough time getting through school, but I never did. Matter of fact, I got lucky and we bounced around for a few schools where you had to have a lot of credits, and then someplace you didn't have so many credits, and I wound up graduating as a junior.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. That is very impressive. So you got to graduate early and then go and do what you love.
I graduated a year early and then ramrodded right into what I love.
Wow, that is impressive. That's impressive, Alex. And you mentioned your younger brother, and he became involved in the industry as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Gary rode for a few years and was starting to develop into quite the rider. He was the leading rider over at Mountaineer 1 year. And then it wasn't too long after that is when he went down and broke his back. He was paralyzed in 2004. So he's one of the riders on our permanently disabled riders list.
Oh, my goodness. Well, folks, that's why I say every week, Alex, how important the PDJF is to our industry. And as a retired rider, you know, I had to retire because of injuries, but I'm able to walk away from it. And so I am extremely grateful, and, you know, the PDJF does such a wonderful thing. And how is your brother doing now?
Oh, he's doing good. He's got his two kids, and they enjoy life. You know, he's just getting into sports and playing football, and his oldest daughter's been playing soccer for a long time, and that's what he does. He just watches them kids, you know, play soccer and do their sports, and he just has a good time.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I'm sure it's hard to talk about, Alex, and, you know, I don't want to dwell on it too much, but when that happened, was it hard for you to continue riding?
No, not necessarily. I really had some problems with my faith as far as, you know, my personal issues. But I never thought twice about quitting riding.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was just something I always wanted to do. And if you ask Gary right now, he'll say the same thing. He said, you know, if he could get out of his chair right now, he'd go right back to it.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. Well, and thank God, you know, thank God he's doing well now. And what a story. And you know, I'm sure does he get to watch you ride?
Yeah, he watches quite a bit. You know, he watches replays a lot, and he's seen the race the other day. So that was the first. He was one of the first ones, you know, to congratulate me, call me up, and you know, it's pretty special. We stay in contact and call and talk to each other quite a little bit.
That's awesome, Alex. That's awesome. Jockey Alex Berzer is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Alex, you said you rode your first race at Beulah Park, and you began riding regularly in 1992. And
yep.
Were you in the Beulah Park River Downs type area when you had the bug?
Yeah, yep. Beulah River Downs Turfway in the winter.
Oh yeah.
You know, and then once Hoosier cranked up in 95, was it 95 or 96? Mm. Hoosier Park cranked up, so we used to bounce around in that circuit there. Was actually starting to do pretty well for myself, and then in 96 I suffered several injuries. Mm-hmm. I'd get up, ride for a little while, go down, get hurt again. Mm-hmm. And then I'd get up and ride for a little while, go down and get hurt again. So I think I only wound up riding maybe 5 months in 96.
Wow.
And then that's when I decided I just needed a change. I needed mm-hmm. a change of scenery. And I came out. I crossed the Mississippi River. Originally, we're from Kansas, and we got a lot of family in Kansas, so I wanted to come out this way and get closer to family. and that's how I wound up in the circuit I'm in now. I rode 1 year there in Iowa, mm-hmm. and didn't do all that well, so was struggling, and I had some buddies of mine that talked me into going over to Nebraska, and I wound up, I spent about a year and a half in Nebraska, and that's where I met my wife, and then we've just been, ever since then, my father-in-law bought a pretty nice filly out of the Keeneland sale that last year we were in Nebraska, and then we took her to Oaklawn Park, and then ever since then, it's been an uphill journey. I mean, it's not necessarily uphill, but it's been up ever since. Mm-hmm. I mean, my career has just been just getting better and better every year.
That's great, Alex. I want to touch on one thing before. I also want to talk about all the traveling you did when you decided to change scenes after those injuries. But I want to touch on something I found very, very interesting when I was doing the research for this show. Your mother was your agent when you had the bug?
Yeah. She hosted my book for a while. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too funny. I don't know if I could.
Racing Form did a story on us at one time, and they titled it "Who's the Boss?"
Yeah. I'm gonna have to look that up. That's too funny. I love my mother to death, but I don't know if I would want her to be my agent. That is that takes some real teamwork there, and the fact that you guys were able to do that says a lot.
You know, it wasn't too long after that. It wasn't too long after my wife and I got married. My mm-hmm. father-in-law suggested that my wife take my book, and
really?
I told my father-in-law there was absolutely no way I'd let somebody have my book. I couldn't dog cuss every once in a while and not feel bad.
You
get mad at your agent and you holler and you scream and you holler at them, and that's just part of hustling book. You get mad at your agent, you know, and they get mad at you, and you holler at each other. And, you know, my agent I have now, I'm lucky. I'm blessed. We've been together for maybe 17, 18 years now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a long time.
And, we've both screamed and hollered at each other quite a little bit. But that's what that's my rule now. I am not going to have an agent. I can't dog cuss every once in a great while and not feel bad about it.
I love it. Well, I don't know about you. You're probably a better person than me, Alex. But when I rode, you know, I blamed everything on the agent. And, you know, like, trainer come up to me, well, why aren't you riding my horse in his race? Oh, that's my agent's fault. He did that. You know, he already committed to the other horse. Whatever it was. I mean, it might not have been true. I might have told the agent, listen, I want to ride this horse. Whatever it was, I always blame the agent. So what if...
Well, you have to.
You
can't put the blame on yourself.
You can't say, yeah, I chose not to ride your horse, right? So you blame the agent. But if your wife is your agent, or your mother in your case too, you know, that can maybe get a little tense afterwards. I don't know, maybe a long drive home.
Yeah, conversations got a little heated every once in a while, and then you couldn't sleep good for two or three days, knowing that your mom was mad at you. And, but it was a good experience for both of us. She hustled book for several different riders.
Really?
During that period, yeah.
Okay. Yep. Wow.
I think she had my little brother's book for a little while, and then mm-hmm. she hustled. I believe she hustled Everett Beach the most. Everett and her got along really well.
Yeah.
She had several different riders.
Did she do that before you started riding, or were you her first?
I think my dad was her first. She hustled my dad for a little while, for a meet or two, mm-hmm. right after they got married. And then, matter of fact, the last time she hustled his book, she was pregnant with me.
Really?
And they went to, they were in East Moline, I believe, is what it was, and then she hustled his book during that meet, and then that's when they went home and said they shut her down for a while.
Yeah, and then she came back and she took your book whenever you you took out your license. That is too funny. That is too funny. That, yeah, like I said, that would be That can get a little tense, I would think, but good on you guys. That is a cool story, Alex. And now, as I mentioned, I also want to talk about, you said after your injuries, you rode in that circuit for a while, the Beulah Park and River Downs and Turfway. Then you had injuries, and then you decided to change the scene, and you went to Kansas. So I got to tell you, you might be the first person I've talked to in a long time who's from Kansas. I've never been to Kansas and don't know much about Kansas. You had family there? Is that where your parents were originally from?
Yeah. My parents are from around Hutchinson, Kansas. And then I come into Nebraska, was riding there in Nebraska. And then I would come home to visit my grandmother and my grandparents and a lot of the other family we had around there on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And my father-in-law trained. He was there in Columbus, Nebraska, the year I met my wife, and he had a bunch of horses up there. And she was working for him up there, and she's actually from just Council Grove, Kansas, which is just south of Manhattan. So that's how we met. And, you know, it's ironic, all the traveling that I've done, and wound up met and married somebody from right there in Kansas.
That is too funny. It comes full circle, you know? And so she was working for your grandfather.
Well, for her dad.
Oh, for her dad. Okay, for her dad. She was working for her dad when you guys met. And tell me about that, Alex. What did you first think when you guys met? Did you have a long? Did you date for a long time and then decide to get married, or how did that work?
I just seen her around the backside, and it was just funny how we met, and we had some mutual friends that hooked us up, and even the first date that we went on, we just dressed identical. I didn't tell her how I was going to dress. She didn't say anything about it, and we didn't necessarily. We just were going to go to a movie, and I showed up to pick her up. It was like we had matching clothes on. It's like, really? This is just crazy, you know, and just we were just, I don't know. It just seemed perfect. From the first time we met, just everything, it was just like a glove. Everything was just right.
Wow.
You know, it was funny. The first horse I rode for my father-in-law was pretty slow and wasn't the best thing on the planet. And I can remember looking at him and said, well, Mr. Good, kind of has a funny way of going. And he looked up at me and he says, is that what they call out east? Instead of just telling me he's slow, he's got a funny way of going. But, you know, and my father-in-law has been pretty good to us, you know, through the years. And we've had a lot of success. He doesn't have just a couple, three horses now, but we've had a lot of fun.
That is a great story. That is a great story. And you and your wife have been married how long now?
I'll be 20 years this next summer.
20 years. That is a
yep.
That is another milestone coming up here, Alex. And how many, you guys have a family?
Yeah. Yeah, we have three kids. Our oldest daughter is in college. She's a freshman in college. And our oldest son is a sophomore in high school. And then our youngest, he is in the third grade. So got a variety anyway.
They're spread out.
They're kind of spread out. Yeah,
yeah,
they are.
For sure, for sure. Do they enjoy the racetrack at all? Do they have any involvement with the industry?
The older two do.
Yeah.
The older two do. The other day when we were in the wind picture and, you know, during the interview, the older two were actually crying. And the youngest one, he loves cars. He loves anything with a motor, and horses just don't seem to move him none. But that's they're special. They're awful special. I get, you know, and I get teary eyed when I even talk about them. Sometimes I just don't see them near as much as I wish.
Yeah.
And you know, this thoroughbred industry, it's tough on a family.
Yeah.
You know, and our family isn't no different.
Yeah, it's very difficult, the nomad lifestyle, and you know your father, you know, he was talking about the same thing whenever he stopped riding himself, and he based that on the family, and it has to be tough. I mean, when I rode, it was just me, myself, traveling around, didn't have to worry about anyone, and you know, that was it. And I can't imagine doing that with, you know, a wife and a family, and that has to be tough. That has to be tough.
Yeah, she's done a wonderful job just holding this all together.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm no different than anybody else. I've had my ups, my downs, my struggles. I had a problem with alcohol for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know. Like I said, I have a hard time talking about some of that stuff. I'm so blessed. Mm-hmm. My wife is just, she's the backbone and support of the whole group.
Love it. I love it, Alex. And that's, again, the life of a rider is so incredibly difficult at times. You deal with the ups and downs of the sport. You know, you're only as good as your last race, and the injuries and the traveling, and it's the weight. You know, we didn't even touch on that. The weight, that's difficult. And, you know, so many jockeys we see that do get involved. You mentioned alcohol. So many jockeys, we just saw Garrett Gomez, you know, what happened to him. And you know, it's tough.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm lucky. I quit drinking about four and a half, five years ago, and it was the greatest thing I've ever done.
Wow.
It's the best thing I've ever done for my family, mm-hmm. you know.
Did it help you as a rider as well?
Well, sure. Yeah, it helped me as a rider. I'm a lot more focused now instead of just being wandering around in a daze all the time.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, I'm more focused on my business, and instead of getting off that last one and hurrying up and getting back to the room to get that first drink and then showing up hungover the next morning and just trying to get through life, you know, and being mad at everybody, and you know, that's just no way to live. You know, and you get to a point that's what you do. You know, it's always somebody else's fault if something happens. You know, and I would call owners at night, and I would blame other riders. This guy's out to get me. This guy's doing this. Well, really? You know, I mean, that's crazy. You know, but that's the way an alcoholic thinks. He thinks everybody's against him. You know, and now I quit drinking, and it was really good for me. Yeah, it's been good for my family. My family has just been so supportive through the years, and I'm blessed. I'm blessed. I got a wonderful wife and our daughter. Like I said, she's in college now and looking to her future. You know, and it's just fun to watch your kids grow up and be close to them and be in their lives, even though a lot of it is by phone and pictures, but at least I'm still in their lives.
Folks, we will continue our visit with jockey Alex Berzer after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit PDJF.org and start making a difference today.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Sweet Abigail has the lead. It is Sweet Abigail, Numancia between horses to the outside of Nice Goddess, and Numancia has taken a short lead. Alex Berzer and Numancia lead it. Mocha Chip going to try to drive through from the inside. Ice Goddess out there, a 16th away from 3,000 for Berzer. Numancia has the lead. Ice Goddess, Mocha Chip trying to get her. Numancia. Mocha Chip, he's done it. Alex Berzer, 3,000. How about that? Well done, young man. Alex Berzer, the 174th ever to win 3,000 races, and he did it here at Oaklawn Park.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am your host, Christina McManigle, joined tonight by jockey Alex Berzer. And Alex, we just heard that replay of your 3,000th victory. What that has to give you goosebumps to hear.
Oh yeah, it does.
Gives me goosebumps to hear. So it has to give you goosebumps. That you know, especially just talking before the break, folks, we were talking about Alex's journey to get to this point, and it has not been an easy one. But like you were saying before, you know, with the help of your family and those close to you, you've accomplished so much and overcome a lot. You've overcome a lot, and I want to talk about a little bit. So I rode myself personally, Alex, in the Mid-Atlantic Circuit, East Coast. I have never been to Prairie Meadows or Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, nothing like that. So I want to talk about that circuit, the circuit that you ride now. Tell us, you know, the different meets you ride and a little bit about the places you ride at.
Well, I guess in the spring we start down here at Oaklawn and just kind of get the ball rolling. It's a tough meet, but it's a good meet. We see a lot of different riders from a lot of different places, you know, and a lot of times when this meet's done, a lot of them guys scatter and they're somebody somewhere. I mean, they're the top echelon, and it's always nice to come down here and ride with that quality of riders. And it just gets your mind right for the rest of the meet, you know, or the rest of the year, you know, mm-hmm. and get your riding good, and then we head off up to Prairie Meadows, and all summer up there, and then after that we get down to Remington, and we finish the year up at Remington. We're usually done at Remington about middle of December.
Nice. So Prairie Meadows, that's in Iowa.
Yep, Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah.
Or Altoona, but suburb of Des Moines.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. How's that racetrack? I've never been there.
You know, it's a good track. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a good track. The surface is good. The horsemen are exceptional. We don't have a big rider colony there. But, and we could use more riders. We could use a lot more horses. You know, that's mm-hmm. the thing. That's the big reason we don't have such a small colony is because we're always short on horses. A lot of the tracks in the summertime, there's so many places to go in the summertime that mm-hmm. a lot of places are, you know, get short in the summer. But, you know, the stewards are tough on us there. Mm-hmm. So it seems like it makes for good racing because everybody stays I don't know. It's a great spot to ride.
Yeah, keep them straight, right?
Yeah, Dad, definitely. Very much so. Keep them straight or go fishing.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned, you know, not having very many horses there. And do you think, is it hard for the smaller tracks? We've seen a lot lately, especially. It seems like these days, without casinos, these smaller racetracks have a hard time surviving. Do you think that is kind of the case there with Prairie Meadows?
Well, we've got a casino, and okay. our pots are good. But, yeah. You know, like I said, there's so many places to go in the summertime. You know, in the wintertime, yeah. you have half the racetracks running, so everybody congregates, and you see a lot more fuller fields in the wintertime. And in the summer, you see, you know, we got twice as many racetracks running during the mm-hmm. summer. So everybody mm-hmm. fans out and heads to different places, and there's not enough horses to go around all the racetracks running in the summer.
Nah, that
you know, and we're one of them. We run a lot of short fields and they have good money.
Yeah,
we run real good money.
How about Remington? What's that like?
Remington's always a tougher meet because, you know, like I said, there's about four or five tracks in our area that shut down in the summer, and then everybody congregates at Remington. Mm-hmm. And it makes for tough racing. We see a lot of fuller fields and just competitive. It's very, very – Oklahoma has always been very competitive. A lot of horses in the state of Oklahoma.
Really?
And it's, there's a lot. A lot of horses. And it just makes for tough racing.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been a tougher place to ride. It's a tougher place to win races. We get down there and we struggle a little bit, but we get through it. It's Remington's is actually about 3 hours from my home, so I can go home a lot during the Remington meet. It makes it nice.
Yeah, that would make it nice. Or you actually, you know, your house, your home is not too far away, which I'm sure most of the year you don't have that luxury. But which of these three, Oak Lawn, Prairie Meadows, or Remington, which is your favorite?
Oh, I might have to say Oak Lawn. I just love Oak Lawn Park. And a lot of it is just, it has to do with the people, the patrons.
Mm-hmm.
The patrons here at Oak Lawn are unreal. I mean, you don't even have to go to the racetrack. You come into Hot Springs and just go around town. And they're just so welcome. They just welcome the horsemen unlike any place you'll ever be. And it's just a lot of fun to come down here in the spring.
I have heard so many people say that about Oak Lawn Park. That's another place. Gosh, I'm thinking about it. I need to go visit some more racetracks. But Oak Lawn is one place that I've never been, but I've heard so many good things about the place. And that so many people come out for the races, which you don't really see at on a regular basis at most racetracks around the country. So that has to be refreshing to see a crowd at the racetrack.
Yeah, it's, you know, like you said, it's amazing how many people we actually get that come to the races. As a rider, I don't go anywhere else that when you get to the top of the lane, you can actually hear the crowd like you can here, you know. And when you get down to the 16th pole, you don't have to look back because you can tell if somebody's coming. You can just tell by the tone of the crowd.
Really?
You know, if you got somebody sneaking up behind you. I mean, it's a lot of fun to come down here and just to be able to look up and see all the people and all the excitement and just to know they come to watch you. They come to watch the horses, and they just come to have a good time. And it's a lot of fun to be able to put on the show for them.
Yeah, that is cool what you just said about you can tell if they're coming for you based on the crowd.
Don't have to look back. You just listen.
That is too funny. I've never experienced that. That is too funny. And would you say, like, when you go out and about in the town there in Hot Springs, do a lot of people recognize you as a jockey because so many people are into the races?
Yeah, yes, they do. You know, and I've been coming down here for 15, 16, 17 years maybe. So I know a lot of the places around it. You know, we eat a lot of the same restaurants and there's a lot of places you don't even have to, you know, you walk in to be seated and they just look up at you and go, "Hello, Mr. Berger, people just recognize you just because you come a lot. I mean, they know who you are, but in the same thing, they're just, people in this area are so welcome and to the horsemen, and they just treat the horsemen with open arms, and it's just such a great area.
That's how it should be, and that is good to hear that they are like that, Alex. And now I have to ask you this question, because you mentioned restaurants. Do you struggle with your weight at all, Alex?
Oh, no more than any other rider. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, I have to watch what I eat. It's gotten better. You know, like I said, I had a problem with drinking. Mm-hmm. And once I quit the alcohol and cut out the alcohol, I don't have near the problem I used to. And, you know, the older I get, I've learned to, you know, what I can and can't eat and what I should and shouldn't eat. No, it gets a lot easier.
That's good. That's good. Do you have to do you mentioned you get on a lot of horses in the morning, and is that enough, do you find, to keep yourself fit and your weight down by getting on a lot of horses in the morning, or do you run or go to the gym or anything in addition to that?
Oh, I have an equisizer that I'll ride sometimes, but most of the time, no, I get on enough horses in the morning. And mm-hmm. and our circuit is, other than 3 weeks out of the year, is pretty much year-round. So, you know, we're here, we get 2 weeks off, then we're right back in Iowa. We get, sometimes we even, we might have a week off, or even we've been known to overlap with Remington before too. So we don't ever get much time off, and my agent tends to keep me busy enough in the mornings that I don't have to worry about working out much in the afternoon.
He's doing his job then.
Oh yeah. Yep. I expect him to keep, that's what I say. As long as he's wearing out my exercise boots, we're all right.
You'll do just fine. Exactly.
Yep.
You know, Alex, I'm trying to figure, when I was doing my research, I was trying to count the number, and I'm not good at math. That's why I rode races, because I did not like math at all. I could deal with the quarter pole. That was about it. But tell me how many riding titles you've won in your career.
I think it was 10 or 11.
10 or 11.
Yeah, I was... Holy smoke, I want to say 11. Mm-hmm. My first one was in Lincoln, Nebraska, and then Columbus, Nebraska, and then I think I've had... three or four in Iowa. We just tied this last year. I wound up tying with Ramon Vasquez for the prairie meet this last fall.
Okay, so yeah.
Or last summer. And I can't remember if it is. It's 10 or 11. We were leading rider over at the Woodlands several times. I think we were leading. I can't remember. It's three or four over there. My wife, you know, I'm terrible about that. My wife, she's got all the trophies at the house and the trophy case. And my son, he's he keeps all the stats. He's the one that will tell you exactly how I've done, what I've done, what I haven't done.
That's funny.
It's been good. It's been very good. I think it has been 11. I think we've had 11 titles.
That's a big number. That's a big number, Alex.
Yeah, it's been a good number.
A very good number. Very good number. And that has to be such a satisfying feeling, I suppose, you know, at the end of the meet, after you put on all that hard work, similar to winning your 3,000th race. That's maybe a little bit bigger, but still, to win a leading rider title, not once but 11 times, that has to be a real satisfying feeling and a real accomplishment. You should be very proud of that.
And thank you.
And you've mentioned your kids a couple of times. Have they ever expressed interest, your older two, in riding races?
My son does. My son wants to ride so bad he can't see straight.
Really?
He's about 5 inches taller than I am, and I think he's taken on more after the good side than my wife's maiden name is Good. He's taken after the good side a little more so than the Bursars, but he wants to ride.
Yeah.
If his weight doesn't get in his way, but we'll just have to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just...
And so how tall are you?
I'm 5'2".
Okay.
And he's about 5'7".
Ooh, yeah, that would be...
He'll be the tallest in the room. There
yeah.
We're not for sure. He's Peter in one way. If he wants to play basketball or ride racehorses, and He's kind of too short to play basketball and too tall to ride racehorses.
Too tall to ride. That's a bad spot to be in. Gosh, that's not good. I mean, I was 5'6", Alex. Of course, I'm a girl, which is a little bit easier with the weight thing. But yeah, it was still tough. You know, and I was definitely the tallest in the room most of the time anyway. But you also, and maybe he can go along this route because the weights are a little bit heavier, you also rode some quarter horses. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I rode some quarters. We used to have a few split meets here in the Midwest at the Woodlands. We had a split meet. And at Prairie Meadows, we used to run a split meet.
Okay.
And even at Claremore in the spring, we used to have a split meet. I don't think they do it at Claremore, and we don't do it at Prairie, and we don't race in Kansas City anymore at all. We'd always pick up a few here and there to ride. It was, like I always said, it broke the monotony. You know, you just get tired of the same old thing, and they're actually a lot of fun to ride. They are a lot of fun. I mean, it's the difference between just even like driving a stock car and driving a drag car.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I've told this story on the show a couple of times. I don't want to bore our audience, but I've worked a quarter horse from the gate one time. That was the biggest rush I've ever felt. And so to actually ride, you know, a quarter horse in a race, that has to be a very, very cool experience. I mean, it is.
And
fast.
There's really, after riding thoroughbreds for a lot of years, there's nothing funner than sitting on a quarter and having them leave. And a quarter horse, you just reach and get them, and you just sit against them. You don't ride them. You don't try to do a whole lot. You don't try to help them. You let them run underneath you and just sit there and hold them together. And it is. It is a big rush. It's a lot different than riding thoroughbreds. It's a lot of fun. You know, they're a little more high strung, and
yeah.
And I think that's the thing that really helped me the most is I had several injuries, and I would get in the gate, and I would be a little bit nervous and a little on edge.
Mm-hmm.
And after I spent a year or two there where we'd ride a few quarter horses along the way, it helped me relax, and it helped me realize that the worst thing I can do is get nervous in here, and the worst thing I can do is get upset, and I'm way better off if I just calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me as a rider, you know, just different experiences along the way. You know, whether they are good or bad, I've always tried to, you know, just take it, try to learn from everything. I mean, it don't matter what you do in life. The day you get up and decide you learned it all and you know it all is the day you're really kind of done.
Jockey Alex Berzer is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Alex, a question I've always wanted to ask you. The nose strip. What? What? I mean, I've seen other riders, and I've actually, you know, looked into them when I rode too, but tell our audience, like, what does that do?
Well, I've broke my nose so many times that my nose is just, the cartilage in my nose is just mush anymore, and the nose strip helps hold it open, and I can breathe way better with the nose strip. It helps me 100%. I don't ride, if I ship somewhere and I'm only on one, I got my nose strip. And it's funny, it started off as a bad joke. Somebody was giving me a hard time about something, and I can't remember exactly how it went. There was something in the room that was stinking the room up, and somebody put a box of nose strips in my locker there as a joke. And I bowed up, and, well, I'm going to wear it anyway. You know, I'll show you guys. And just, I fell in love with the nose strip the first time I ever put one on. And I don't go out there without them anymore.
Wow. That's a funny way to come about finding what works. But hey.
Yeah.
You know, good thing you did find that out. How many times have you broken your nose?
Oh, I don't know. The first time I broke it is I went down in a bad spill. I had a and I landed right on my face. And I busted it bad. I had a concussion where I felt the results. 30 days later, I was still dizzy.
Wow.
And ever since then, my nose is just a vulnerable spot. So I've rebroke it, you know, 4 or 5 times since.
Mm. That can't be fun. That cannot be fun.
No, it's never any fun.
So thankfully you have the nose strips and now you can help you breathe in the...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that has to help a lot, especially under your circumstances. My God. Ugh. Do you know, like, what all injuries have you had as far as broken bones?
You know, I've been pretty lucky. Been real lucky. My collarbone 3 times. Crushed first lumbar vertebrae. Bone in one, my left thumb, wrist in my right, or my right wrist, bone in my right foot, probably my leg. I think I cracked a bone in my leg a couple of times. But, you know, all in all, I've never really had to miss all that much time. I missed out when I broke my collarbone. But other than those, you know, we really never had to miss. I've always been blessed where I was lucky enough where what I did break or what I did hurt, I could keep riding with.
Yeah.
You know, so far my chiropractor keeps telling me I got no signs of arthritis. I don't know. I doubt his experience once or twice or here or there, but I've been pretty lucky. We really haven't had too many, you know, injuries where I had to necessarily stop during the way.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness, Alex. And so you're 43 and you seem, you know, to be in the best health of your life and just on top of the world riding better than ever. I mean, the day before or was it that day? What one day right around when you won your 3,000th race, you won three races in a day. Was that Saturday?
Yeah, it was the Saturday. It was the day before.
The day before. Okay.
Yep. My parents were talking about coming down to be there for my 3,000th, and I was telling my mom, I said, we're 4 away. I got no shot. We might be a couple of weeks before I get it. You know, things are kind of hit and miss. This is a tough race meet, and we rattled off 3 on the card. Called her up, and I said, hey,
get down
I'm
here.
Going away. You better get down here.
How about that? So, again, you're riding better than ever, Alex, and healthy, and everything's going great. And so, hopefully, you know, you ride for many, 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 many more years, Alex. But what do you plan on doing when you do eventually retire, you know, years and years and years down the road? Do you plan on staying in the industry, maybe doing what your mom did, an agent, or your dad, he was a trainer? What do you think way, way, way down the road?
You know, I have no idea. I'm like any other rider. Most jocks, you can go through the jocks room right now and ask every jock in the room. They have absolutely no idea what they're going to do. I have just stumbled around and took a couple of online courses, and I just passed a gunsmithing course of all things.
Really?
And so I'm licensed through the ATF now to do a little gunsmithing, but whether or not it's going to come to anything, it's a kind of a different hobby. I don't know. It's strange. I know it sounds strange. And it's as far from the horse racing industry as a person could get. And like I said, it was just something I stumbled across. But I have no idea. I really don't. I love the horses. I love the whole industry. The industry, the thoroughbred industry, has been so good to me through the years. And I can't see ever getting away from it.
Mm-hmm.
My wife wants the kids get through school, and she was always at the racetrack. She was born and raised at the racetrack, and then she's gotten away from the races the last several years since our kids are in school. But once the kids are out of school, I'm pretty sure she's going to be on the road right back with me. So it just depends. You know, maybe it'll be time once I quit training or quit riding, maybe she'll start training, you know, and maybe we'll follow her dream for a while. I have no idea.
Love it, Alex. I love it. Well, hey, we only have like 2 minutes left here. So real quick, one more question for you, Alex. What, you mentioned gunsmithing. What are your other hobbies that you do? I know you're busy riding and traveling and everything like that, but do you have any other hobbies?
I enjoy fishing. I enjoy fishing, and some friends of mine, we shoot quite a bit. So that's what the whole gunsmithing, that's
makes
where
sense.
That kind of started. But, you know, being down here in Hot Springs, if you love to fish, this is a great spot for it. So,
really?
Yeah, it really is.
I went fishing. I went deep sea fishing in Florida. That was the only time I caught anything. When I just go fishing in a lake, like standing there, I never catch anything, Alex. So you're going to have to share your secrets with me sometime, because apparently I scare them away. I'm not sure. It's not very good. But
I never said I was any good at fishing. I said I enjoy fishing. I'm not much different. But it's nice to get out in the timber and just get away from everything and just be in the quiet every once in a while. It's peaceful.
I get it. Well, Alex, I can't believe it, but we are all out of time, and I would like to wish you all the best the rest of the Oaklawn meet and all your travels and fishing and gunsmithing. Alex, it's been such a pleasure talking with you tonight.
All right. Thank you very much.
Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can listen to on HRRN. Don't forget to join the Big A, Anthony Stabile, and myself this Friday for 3 hours of live racing coverage beginning at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time for another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.